It's the Escape Artist Podcast at DonkeyJawProjects.com. Hosted by yours truly, Marshall Couture, also known as Black.
We make, relate, create, it's change harness. The soul within the comics and movies that they market. Activating people's imaginations, the target, work the hardest. With passion and heart, it's Escape Artist.
Alright, what's up everybody? This is Marshall Couture, also known as Plex, and you're listening to the Escape Artist Podcast. And today we have a special guest, Mr. Eddie Crosby. How you doing, man?
Oh, good. Very well. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me on the show, Marshall.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure. You know, like I said, you know, before, I'm a huge fan of your work, and I think I think that's pretty obvious. But yeah, I mean, it's really cool. Do you want to just real quick shout out whatever sites or anything where people can find you?
Yeah, the main site is www.eddycrosby.com. That's E-double-D-Y. And also I'm on Tumblr. Eddie Crosby. Tumblr.com, I think that's it.
Okay.
So that's basically my main two sites. And also I'm on Facebook. So if you do a search for Eddie Crosby, I'm on Facebook.
Cool. That's awesome. And I've seen you on both Tumblr and your site and Facebook.
I also have a Flickr site and the Pinterest. But I think if you go to my main site, the eddycrosby.com site, you can. There's links there to all the other sites.
Absolutely. Cool. So, all right. So that's really cool. Now, I guess we'll just start off with kind of the basic general question that that usually everybody asks, but I always think it's an interesting question because the answer is always differ from artist to artist. But you know, really, where did you get your start, man? Like, what was the first, you know, kind of inclination of I want to kind of be an artist and stuff?
I really couldn't do anything else. Mm-hmm. In school, I got very low marks for anything but art, so I was. You know, I would get the first grade for art, but all the rest, you know, chemistry, physics, maths, very low. Mm. So the only thing I could do was coming out of school, because my brother was an electrical engineer.
Okay.
And I thought of following, you know, I didn't even think of art as a career.
Right.
Maybe I'll follow my brother doing electrical engineer, but I didn't have the aptitude for it. I didn't have the marks for it. But I never considered art as a career, even though I was good at it in school. Then eventually, you know, I got out of school. I went to the careers office, and I said, what's going? Is there any course out there I can do? And then they mentioned, you know, this art course. So I got into that. That was in 1987. I left school.
Okay.
So I got into that, and...
So is this, like, college or something, or what is this?
Yeah. Oh, okay. This is college, yeah. So, okay. Left school in 78, and then joined this basically, it's a foundation course in art, which gives you, you know, builds your skills up in figure drawing, illustration, just like a general course.
Okay.
Yeah. But at that time, I was... getting interested into comics and fantasy art. Mm-hmm. So I always sort of liked that sort of kind of style of painting. And I decided to do this course, really, because I couldn't do anything else.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's when I sort of met people who were sort of had similar interests in art school.
Okay. And you said this was around 87?
87, yeah. 87. Oh, okay. Basically 87 to... 78 to 80.
Oh, okay.
It was a 2-year course.
All right. So did that give you like did you get like some kind of associate's degree or something? I don't know what if they have the same kind of degrees there.
This was in England.
Oh, okay.
So
is that where you're originally from?
I was born in Sri Lanka.
Oh, okay.
Which is near India.
Okay.
But we migrated to England in 1965. So I was born in 1962.
Okay.
We migrated in 1965, so I don't really remember anything of where I was born. Because I was only 3 when I moved to England.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in England, basically. I did all my schooling in England, mm-hmm. and art school. So I spent about 20 years in England, and then after that, we migrated to Australia.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've been around.
That's great, though.
Yeah.
Sounds so like Australia is a good place to end up, I would think. I don't know.
Yeah. It's better. When I first came to Australia, it was very... I first came to Perth, a city called Perth, and this is in Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very, very quite isolated and quite small.
Okay.
So if you want to do anything in the art, it's not a good city, you know.
Right.
But coming from London, it was very isolating to come to Perth.
Wow.
Yeah. But so I was in England, left school, began art school. I did art school for 6 years.
Wow.
And at the end of that time in art school, my friend and I got a job doing, do you remember those role-playing books?
Yep. Like Dungeons and Dragons type of stuff?
Yeah. Like Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yep.
Yeah, so we got a job. The guy who wrote that saw our... We had an end of year show at the end of the course.
Okay.
And the guy who wrote those books saw our artwork, and then he decided, to choose us to illustrate a book, one of his books. And that was my first job.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, so that was quite like one of those books in those days were quite bestsellers. So there was like one of the top 10. It was just like a small paperback.
Right. So the was it for illustrations within the book, or was it for a cover design, or how was that?
It was about 30 illustrations.
Okay.
Black and white illustrations in the book.
Okay.
So this was called Caverns of the Snow Witch.
Okay.
So it was book 9. And so that was just... We had about 3 or 4 months to do it, but it was about 32 illustrations.
And you said you got hired with a buddy of yours?
Yeah. This is the guy I met when I first entered art school.
Okay.
He was also interested in fantasy art.
Right.
So we were always sort of together.
So
he got interested he introduced me to like Fazetta, Boris.
Right.
All those artists.
So did you guys, you said 40 illustrations you had to do or something?
About 32.
32. And you guys pretty much one did one and one did another type of thing?
Yeah, we split it up.
Okay.
He did all the inking because we wanted it to look all the same. That have the same sort of style,
right?
But he penciled like 15, I penciled 15,
okay,
and he inked all of them,
okay.
And he had a, if you look at the illustration, they're quite like very bold inking style. It's very like it's almost like a woodcut. They look like woodcuts.
Wow. Yeah.
So they've done about A3 size, but the print actual when it was printed, it's about paperback size.
Wow, interesting. Now,
yeah.
I would assume by now that's probably out of print.
I think they're reprinting them now.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And so those books went into computer games. I think they did computer game versions of those books.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
And I would also assume, and maybe be wrong, and hopefully be wrong, that... That being your first ever gig, you probably didn't go for some royalty rights.
Well, actually, funny you mentioned that, because that was the first... I did get some royalties from that first job.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah, because we did that book in, say, August of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And in September, I migrated to Australia.
Okay.
So when I arrived in Australia, over the first few months, I would get all these copies, like the French copy, the Spanish copy, the Japanese copy of that book, and also get some royalties.
Wow. And so, were you credited properly in the book?
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like a pretty cool first gig.
it was one of the best gigs I've had.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm looking at I figured I'd Google it. Go ahead and Google it, and I see a lot of images here. I think I don't know if these are yours or not, but.
Cabinet of the Snow, which the cover's not mine anyway, but.
But all these little black and white illustrations—they look like they're from an old book. So.
Yeah, that's them. Yeah.
Wow, they look really awesome.
thanks. Yeah.
Definitely a little different than what I've seen from you.
right. Yeah. Well, this is going back, 84.
Right. Your style's developed.
Yeah. But I mean, that was a good job because we were doing what we were really interested in.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. But
even though we never played the games, we never played role-playing games.
Right.
I have no interest in role-playing games, but we were interested in drawing dragons and zombies and fantasy creatures.
Yeah.
It was a good job.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff, I mean, I don't know the history of role-playing games and stuff that well, but I know it was pretty darn big when I was growing up, and,
Right.
That sounds like it was big even back then, too. Pretty big, because you said it got on, bestseller lists and stuff.
Yeah. I think it was one of the, the top 10 books in the UK. Right. Those books always get into the top 10.
Right.
Yeah, so they must, But that was a good, because it was for Penguin Books, and, we had a contract, and they gave royalties, and they made sure, you were paid properly. So, it was good conditions.
Sounds like a good gig. And did they ever hire you guys back for more, or was that not the nature of it?
Later, I left for Australia, so I sort of lost contact with Penguin Books.
Oh. Okay.
But my friend got more work, not for a full book, but for sort of similar work.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So, well, we. Went pretty far into the first ever gig that you got. But it was interesting, very interesting. It sounds like a fun gig.
Yeah, it was good. It was the sort of thing that I could, when I came to Australia, I showed that book around when I went to publishers. I would always have that book in my, in my portfolio. Trying to sort of get more work. But at that time in Australia, the publishers weren't really in England, were in London.
Right.
And coming to Australia, there was nothing like that,
Right. Probably.
Like that.
Right. And people probably went to London, to get that kind of stuff, and you were kind of moving away from that.
Yeah, exactly. That was the thing, It was so, they would, in Australia, I remember seeing in Perth, seeing a magazine. It was basically like a fanzine. they didn't have any money,
Right, yeah.
They're not going to pay you, hundreds of dollars for an illustration,
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you did that, and that was a cool gig, and then you moved to Australia. Did you continue pursuing artistic stuff, like gigs and stuff, or how'd that work?
Yeah, well, first, I couldn't find anything in Perth. Then I spent about 1.5 years in Perth. But my sister lived in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to come to Melbourne because they said, if you want to find work in the publishing industry, you've got to go to the eastern states of Australia. It's either Sydney or Melbourne where all the action is. So I came to Melbourne, and then I tried to find work in the publishing industry, sort of educational publishers.
Okay.
And this was in 86.
Okay.
And that's when I found much more work in publishing.
Okay.
But, in publishing, the pay is quite low. It doesn't pay very well.
Right.
But at that time, there was quite a bit of work in doing textbooks.
Okay.
Yeah, so textbooks, and that led on to two picture books. I did two picture books for schools.
Okay.
So what, this was all in the late 80s.
What does that mean, picture books? Is that like the children's books that are mainly pictures?
Children's, children's book. One, the first book was about a cat called Cat Crusoe. It's about a cat who was stranded on an island. And the second one was about was based on Thor.
Oh, wow.
So like the Norse myths.
Right.
Sandy. The story of Thor. So I illustrated that. Yeah. But these books were like color, full color picture books.
Right.
That were sold directly to schools.
Right.
They never went into the shops, but they were sold. I think it was for Ashton Scholastic.
Okay.
And yeah. So that was in the late 80s. I was getting quite a bit of work doing textbooks and then these two picture books.
Okay. And were these like paintings or were they still ink?
Yeah. The cat one was full. I did, went mad and actually did them on canvas.
Okay.
So it's full paintings on canvas.
Wow.
Which is a lot of work. And then the second one was all just pen and ink on paper.
Okay. I imagine the logistics of something like that back then was different. So did you like go to their office with like an armful of canvases or something?
pretty much. Yeah, exactly. See, the first one, I never got those canvases back.
Oh, yeah. Man.
For some reason, I think I got one, but they took them. Like they never gave them back. You know?
Yeah. It's just not important to them. They probably put them in a closet somewhere or something.
Yeah, well, see, I wanted to do something that was sort of like painterly,
right?
And I had to find out how to stretch canvas and all that. So I maybe took on too much there, but did finish it. But
right,
maybe I should have just gone with pen and ink.
Well, I mean, that's the children's book art has always been super inspiring to me because there's such a variety of just all different mediums and all different things, and you know, and also just in the rendering too, like some stuff will be almost like a childlike rendering and some stuff will be like absolutely like beautiful paintings and things like that. So
So I mean, I think like, you know, with picture books you can see, like with comics, I would find something daunting with comics is actually drawing the characters again and again so many times. Yep. Where with picture books it's almost like, okay, I can do one illustration, but with picture books maybe you can do like 10. I can imagine doing 10 illustrations. But with comics I always find that it's really daunting to do.
You might do 10 on one page.
And keeping it on model, you know?
Right.
There's so much work. Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely rough. I'm learning. I mean, I'm still very new at it, but like I've said many times through some of these videos and the podcast, you know, the 100 Days of Comics thing is really helping me to make it much more manageable, you know? Just the idea of working. You don't have to sit down and complete something. You're just making sure you put in your time every day, and then eventually stuff actually gets finished, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're getting to a routine where you, even though you might not be posting every day, you at least you're posting something, and that's keeping you, you know, on track.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm probably one of the worst examples of the 100 days guys because I literally do, the way it's been lately, I've been so busy. August is crazy for me. I've been doing like 3 or 4 maybe a week, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel bad because some of these people, I mean, kind of the point is sort of to do it every single day for 100 days, you know, that's kind of the point. Yeah. But I'm just like, whatever, I'm master of my own destiny. And I'll just do it the way I want to do it because I have a job, I have a lot to take care of, I help take care of my sister-in-law's family a lot, and there's just a lot of stuff, it's impossible for me to, like, really, if I'm so strict about it, then I'll hate it and I'll just stop. Yeah. And I don't want to do that. So I'm definitely going to make it to the 100, but, you know, it's not like people have started, you know, a good 20 days after me and they're like past me now, you know?
I think you mentioned in one of your 100-day videos that you were doing the Traveler's comic. You were drawing things that you weren't really wanted to draw.
Right.
And that, I think, well, that was really interesting because I would feel similar, you know. drawing something or like perspective. I tend to draw things very sort of stylized.
Right.
Simply because I can't draw realistic.
Right.
I find it difficult to draw very realistically.
Well, I mean, it also might just be, is it fun for you to draw realistically? Because to me, you know, like, I kind of almost don't buy that. Like, I think you can draw realistically. Just seeing your work, like, how good you are, like, I think that realistic drawing is actually kind of easier, and I've mentioned that on my podcast too, but, you know, because you're just looking at something and drawing what you're seeing. Like, I've always been surprised at what I can do just by looking at reference and drawing, because right. I'm like, I can't do that without the reference, but with the reference I can do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not like, there's many people who are way better than me, but you know, I think you probably could do some realistic stuff, but like I said, what's more fun to you, though? You know, like, do you really want to draw realistically? I mean, there's no reason why we have to. This isn't like freaking the Renaissance where they, like, force you to only draw that way. Like,
yeah. I mean, when I first started art school, when I was 18 or 19, I was really into drawing something very photorealistically.
Right.
Like, I felt a good drawing was a photorealistic drawing.
Right.
And, you know, I spent hours trying to get it, like, look like a photograph.
Right.
But now, you know, I find that boring. Like.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. It's like, and I think everybody kind of tends to feel that way. Especially because, you know, if you drawing realistically is like validation for an artist, sort of. Like,
yeah.
People on the outside who don't do art and stuff, and even some artists don't realize it, but people on the outside, they look at something like that and they're like, wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
that blows their mind, where, you know, you might do something that's stylized, maybe more like your stuff, and they'll be like, they'll really like it, but they'll be like, they feel like it's not as, it's easier or something. And I think it's actually 100% opposite, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't realize that, like, when you're drawing from reference, you're literally copying. I mean, you really are just copying, and it's really what's your copying skills. And like you said, if you get, some people go for ultra photorealistic. I mean, at that point, just take a picture, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, why? Like, what's the point? So, you know, I've come to learn that that's not necessarily the greatest thing in the world. And like I said, illustrative techniques have always been much more difficult to me. And, you know, I don't know. But I that's the stuff I want to do. And that's the stuff I have the most fun doing, you know. So, you know.
But with the Traveler's comic, you're doing something more realistic, isn't it?
I don't really know, because for the comic, I've really only drawn, like, stick figures for the most part, except for the first page. I started getting into it, and I did do some kind of more realistic stuff, but the more I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking maybe I should, and it's really hard for me not to sit there and draw the hash, the cross-hatching and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking maybe I should just do contours, you know. Maybe I should not do, and, you know, because if it does get colored, most likely I'm probably going to end up being the one coloring it. And I'm not, and I'm not good at coloring, and, I mean, I'm all right, but I just don't, it's more technical stuff. I'm just not, I don't have a lot of time in front of the computer. If everything's closed lines and there's not, like, a lot of cross-hatching. It's a lot easier to color on the computer. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet, but probably, yeah, I guess it might end up turning out more realistic because I'm not disciplined enough to help myself at this point.
Yeah.
So, but the thing
at,
is,
you're looking at one of your, the Robo characters?
Robo-Hobo, yeah.
Yeah, that would be if you're going to do quite a comic with that, you'd be in for a lot of drawing.
Oh, absolutely. That character has a whole story to it, and that's, I've been going back and forth all the time, like, should I hire somebody who knows how to do this stuff better to do it, or should I learn and get better and just become awesome at it and do it myself?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really a hard decision because I'm also thinking about, should I be focusing more on the business and try to get more other people to do this stuff, or, you know, should I, you know, I don't know. It probably will never make money if I try to do everything myself.
Yeah.
And not that that's the only point, but it is a goal, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. And plus, somebody else could do it better than me. You know, it's just, I'm never going to get to the point where somebody else who has been practicing their whole life on mech stuff, I'll never get to that point because I don't have a passion to just draw a lot of mech stuff like other people do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I mean, I feel like I want to draw it, though. Like, but I probably shouldn't.
What about doing something in more like a picture book format, where you're doing less drawing? You know, I don't know how big a picture book is. Say it's 24 pages, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always open to stuff like that. But I think this one calls for a comic.
Ah, right.
You know, it just kind of speaks to that, so...
Yeah.
But so I did want to get a little bit more into you know, where did you end up going, you know, a little bit more of your journey so far. So, like, what happened you know, after you did those picture books and stuff, were you still continuing to pursue stuff? Did you get more gigs, or how'd that go?
No, it's when I started that first picture book, the cat picture book, I had to get a job, a full-time job, and I was working night shift at a post office in like a mail center.
Okay.
So while I was doing that picture book, I was working, and then, I had to just get full-time work, and I did less and less of the drawing because I was working night shift, and I found it quite hard to sort of, you know, do my drawing and pursue my art in my spare time.
Right.
So. I did get a bit of educational sort of illustrations done and worked for a few publishers, but it slowly dwindled during the early 90s.
Right.
So what I did in 92, I left Australia and went to Japan for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
So, I always wanted to go to Japan and I wanted to live there. So I was teaching English in Japan for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I didn't do any artwork in Japan. I was just teaching English and traveling. So from 92 to 95, I was in Japan. Came back to Australia in 95, and wanted to get back into the art, into doing, I wanted to sort of, what I did, I went to a job interview. And I had all my illustrations, all my paintings in my folio. And I went to this, I think it was some sort of magazine. They wanted an illustrator. And they looked at my work and they said, do you know any digital programs? Do you know, because we use Illustrator here.
Right.
And I had really absolutely no idea about Macs or PCs. I have no idea about computers.
Right.
I have no idea about this program called Illustrator. So then I sort of said, maybe I should... get my skills up to speed, and that's when I did a course, at college, in digital art.
Okay.
In trying to work out, how to use Illustrator and Photoshop. You know.
Right.
I'd never heard of these programs, and everything I did from before then was all by hand. You know.
Right. Well, back then it was pretty new anyways, so that's...
It was. That's right. It was. So that was, I think, Photoshop was like Photoshop 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So basically what I did, the course was a graphic art course.
Okay.
So it was a trade, like it was a two-year course where you learn about printing and you learn about using... learning Photoshop, learning Illustrator, learning InDesign, but learning basically how to help a graphic designer print their work.
Okay.
You know? So setting up everything for print.
Okay.
So if there was a book, the graphic artist would set up all the pages.
Okay.
And you know, deal with all the you know, all the printing problems and all that, you know?
Yeah, all the stuff we don't really want to do as artists.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it's probably good. I mean, at least you're working within the realm of art stuff and design and stuff. So
yeah,
well, I actually feel like I would enjoy something like that, but I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, well, that was one of the selling points of the course. It wasn't just a course where you learn Photoshop and Illustrator. There was 100, at that time in the, this was 96, at that time there was 100%, you know, you would get a job at the end of the course, definitely.
Oh, right.
Because you would go into a design studio as a graphic artist, where you basically, it was more a technical job.
Right.
You learn, you know, where you basically print the what they have, you know,
right.
Set up the files for printing. Yeah.
Yeah, and that at that point, I'm sure that, you know, there was a lot less people who knew that stuff, you know.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, at that time, you know, people barely had an email address.
Yep.
This was 96, 95, 96.
Yeah.
You know, it was all like, it was a great time because it was especially in Australia where you felt that you were like, only a few people knew about this, you know.
Right.
And you were sort of like a bit starry-eyed at the computers. You know, we looked at the computers, we looked at all this stuff.
Yeah.
And we were like, it was like, you know, being in Aladdin's cave, you know. And it's sort of, now it's sort of, so everything is like online, all these things seem to be so, you know, easy now.
Absolutely.
But at that time, like, you know, building a website was so difficult.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so you did that training, and I'm assuming you got into that kind of work then?
Well, I got into, when I finished the course, I actually got into an internet company designing websites.
Okay.
By doing the interface, just designing the interface.
Right.
And they do the coding.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't actually graphic art, but it was something to do with design. You know?
Right.
Yeah. So that course I did was... more sort of design. It was also graphic art, but it was also more into graphic design as well.
Okay.
So there was a little illustration, and I tried to get my illustrator skills. I tried to use my illustrator skills in that course.
Yeah.
But basically the course was more design oriented.
Right.
So
yeah, there's definitely a difference. People who aren't necessarily artists can find their way into graphic design sometimes.
Yeah,
but I think it does help to have that artistic bent, you know, to be able to do some of the graphic stuff, because obviously design is, you know, huge within your art as well. So,
but what I found that my background in art, like when I did the course in the 70s, that was so valuable, so much more valuable for me when I was doing design, you know, because I was coming to it with already knowing a little bit about images and good design, and you know, I used those skills I learned in the 70s.
Yep.
And I brought them. When I used a computer, when I first used Photoshop, I sort of knew what to do, you know, when I was designing something. You know, like I already learned about, you know, things like balance and color and.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I guess they did kind of create that program pretty intuitively for an artist.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I could say I'm pretty much a Photoshop newbie because I use GIMP. And that's, I have used Photoshop, and I'm sure if I ran, if I had no more GIMP and I only had Photoshop, I probably would find my way pretty quickly. But
yeah.
I'm like pretty new to that. You really got in on the ground floor.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been using Photoshop since 96, and I think I only use 10% of it.
Right, yeah, it's such a big program, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Well, now it's, I think it's a subscription service.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm using Photoshop CS2 or something.
Yeah.
And I haven't upgraded. I mean, I bought my Mac in 2008, and I really haven't really upgraded that much, you know.
Actually, I heard this, and I really need to look into it. I just haven't had the time, but I guess the lower versions, one of the lower versions or whatever, of Photoshop is free now.
Is it?
From the company. You know, they have it free from the company, but if you want to use the, you know, the newer one, you can subscribe, do the subscription service or whatever.
Right,
so.
Right. Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I wouldn't go for the subscription service. You know, it's totally pointless for me.
Yeah, it kind of seems a little like I don't know if you can still buy it right outright too. Because I would take, even though it's so expensive, I would take that option, because after, you know, a year and a half, you're going to be now spending more than you would have if you bought it outright. You know.
Yeah. Well, I did look on eBay to buy it outright. And it was like, you know, $1,000, $1,500 or $2,000.
Right.
I didn't see any, you know, bargains there.
Yeah, no, so, definitely not.
But
yeah, so that's pretty cool that, you know, you really got in on the ground floor of getting into Photoshop and stuff. And where did things go from there? Did you just continue working in that realm till now, or?
When I was at, this was at like a local college, which is in Australia, it's called TAFE,
mm-hmm.
T-A-F-E, which is like a tertiary institution. I think in America they call it community college. Is that?
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's sort of like, because there's TAFE and there's universities.
Right.
So TAFE is always more like a more hands-on or practical.
Okay.
Where they, you know, like you see a lot of, like the college not far from a TAFE college not far, which is really specialized in catering and cookery.
Right.
This sort of graphic arts, you know.
Okay. Well, for us, it is similar. Like there is a separation between universities and community colleges, but community colleges kind of mimic universities for the most part.
Right.
Basically, community colleges are the public version of a university, and the universities are private.
Right.
So they're cheaper, but you can actually get a really good education out of one.
Yeah.
And then what you're saying, it sounds like there is more specialized schools too, and I don't know if we have a name for those or not. But there are definitely places where you can go specifically to learn, like, I don't know, construction, engineering stuff or whatever. And then there's ones where same thing, like maybe a cooking thing or what you were saying, you know. So
A big one is automotive.
Yeah, that one as well.
TAFE is very. I mean, they say like, oh, we're going to teach you basically practical skills.
Yeah.
So at the end of the course, you basically be employable.
Yep. And I went to kind of a specialty school. I went to, but this is like even way different, is a broadcasting school.
And
you go there for like, I think it was like a 3-month course or something, and you get your certificate or whatever. And they do help you to get a job, but what I learned is broadcasting is kind of not the greatest industry to get into. If you have a passion for it, it's fine, you know, go to that school and go work really hard. But if you're looking at it as just like another career, you know, that, oh, maybe this will be good type of thing, it's not so good, because when you first start for at least for like a half a year or something, you're going to have to pretty much work for free, you know, and work your way in, you know, so. I mean, I just couldn't do that when I was doing that.
So the jobs in in like broadcasting are very low, low paid, or?
Oh yeah, low paid, really bad hours. I mean, it's unless you happen to be like a, you know, say if it's in radio or whatever, you happen to be one of the like morning show hosts or something.
Okay.
That's right. Like a really largely sought after job, or maybe like a news reporter of some sort. You're pretty much not going to get paid too well. So, right, I mean, right. I'm sure people, I mean, there's plenty of people that work there, so people live off of it, but it wasn't for me. I was married at that point already, and, you know, it just was not going to cut the mustard, so.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few courses now. I picked up a brochure for a private school. There's a few private schools in Melbourne which do 3D art or game art, 3D right. art. And they sell it. The brochure is really sexy. It's, you know, very glossy,
right?
And I think it's quite expensive, but it's just a 1-year course where you learn how to do how to design game characters.
Right.
One is learning how to program games.
Okay.
One is you know, how to do 3D modeling. But I just wonder the people who do that course, which is quite expensive and is very intensive, if they actually get work, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but I know that that is a pretty, I'm pretty sure that's a pretty booming career path at this point. You know, that's a big, a big deal. Like, a lot of illustrators are moving over into the gaming realm.
Yeah.
You know, people just pay money for that for some reason more than they do for a lot of other medias. So.
Yeah. But then again, I don't want to be like sort of like a cog in the wheel.
Right.
You end up being working in the studio. You may have a little interest in game art, but the actual job is you're basically in a cubicle producing, you know, working like a 90, maybe even more hours than 95.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Not really enjoying it.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, but at least it would be somewhere maybe in the realm of what you're into. But like for me, that would be a step up for me, because, you know, as I've said before, you know, I pretty much do manual labor, so it's like, you know, anything in that direction would probably be good for me, but I have to pursue it, and I haven't really. So you ended up going to do some more schooling, and then and then where did that take you to?
So that was from, say, 1999, I finished that schooling.
Yep.
So, and then I got that job, then got the job in the internet company. Then I went to Japan, came back in like 1995, and basically tried to, you know, try to get back into illustration, you know. So yeah. So, and since then I've been sort of trying to do freelance,
okay,
and did a little bit of teaching. So you know, at that college I was training at, so I did a bit of teaching, and I sort of got fed up with that, and since then I've been trying to do freelance work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but it's sort of hard, because, you know, with freelance it's really feast or famine.
Yeah,
it's
that's what I hear.
Like, even I would say I've been doing this for 30 years, like, you know, in the arts, doing things with art, but I've never really had a stretch where I've got enough work where I could live off it.
Right.
You know, it's always been in drips and drabs. I would do a little bit, then have to get a full-time job, then I would stop it, then I would get, you know, I would leave that full-time job, then do a bit of more work. But I've never had like a few years where I'm just constantly working in art.
All right. Well, that's definitely that's interesting, and it seems like that is a pretty typical. You know, that's what I hear from a lot of illustrators, that kind of story. But I think recently, and I don't know how long it's been, but and I think this is something that a lot of illustrators, they get kind of disillusioned with trying to get into work and stuff like that. And sometimes they even get to the point where they don't like even doing their art anymore. And I think Luis Escobar, who he runs the what is it, the drawing website. He runs that website, and he works for Simpsons. I follow him, and one thing that he said was that when that happens, you have to go back and start drawing stuff that you like to draw again. You know, you have to do that. Okay. That's how you're going to continue to have that passion, or else if you're just doing your work and your work and your work and then coming home and not doing any art, then it's like you totally get disillusioned and you don't even want to do it anymore. And he said you have to draw for yourself. And that a lot of times reignites the fire. And I kind of suspect that may be what you've done, because I mean, it seems like you just pump out a lot of art constantly, and it has nothing to do with, you know, stuff that is probably for hire, from what I can tell.
Well, I mean, none of it I've got any money from, you know.
Right.
I've not made any money out of all these doing the sketches. I mean, apart from this, like, I did this tiki drawing, and then someone, some guy, some art director liked that. And employed me to do an illustration. That's the only work I've actually got out of doing my own stuff, you know. But it's really just doing, just drawing, just for the fun of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Just have my pleasure.
Was that something you've just always done? Always been drawing and stuff in your sketchbook, or is this something where you kind of, like I was saying, you maybe had to reignite the fire type of thing?
Yeah. More or less. I've not kept a sketchbook all the time. You know, it's been some periods where I've kept a sketchbook and drawn, and then sometimes I really haven't drawn at all. And that's why I find difficult. I mean, I find it sometimes quite guilty when I don't draw. Sometimes I just am lazy. I'm not motivated.
Right.
I don't want to draw. I can't be bothered. And then I find, oh, why am I like this? Surely if I was a good artist, I would be drawing every minute of the day. Like, if I really love this, I would surely I would be drawing every day.
Right. You
know? And then some days I wouldn't draw for a week. And then I said, well, you know, why? Why is that, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's pretty common. I know it's, for me, it's been similar, you know, and it's not until, you know, maybe the last few years and just more and more as I go that I've been really pushing the art and being like, all right, you know, I really want to get better, and I want, if I love it so much, why am I not doing it more?
Yeah.
So let me just try to just get that pencil to just continuously be moving. And you know, I'm still struggling with it, even though I feel like I've come to some thresholds and stuff, but I have learned that having these different kind of goals than like I had in the past have been helping. And like I said, I don't remember if it was before we started recording or not, but with the 100 days, just having that commitment to, all right, do 30 minutes today, sit down and do 30 minutes. It's a lot easier to think of that goal and accomplish that goal than to think you got to finish your comic every day, you know, because that becomes super overwhelming. And also, the other thing that I'm trying to work out, but I started it on the wrong month. August is the worst month for me to start a challenge, which I started like 3 in August. But is to finish one whole sketchbook a month. And it's not so much, you know, make a beautiful art in a sketchbook or anything. It's, even if you're scribbling, even if you're making the worst drawings in the world, fill up that sketchbook in 1 month, you know?
So
I kind of brought the August one over to September, and we're going to try to finish this one in September, and then I'll continue to do that. But, I mean, I've found, because I have to fit it in a lot of different times during the day, I'm itching to get to my sketchbook. Like, I enjoy it. Like, it's like, let me fill up some pages, and I'm getting a little bit better, and I'm starting to learn things I never would have learned because I didn't want to draw the stuff before. So I'm finding that helpful.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to go on to another topic. So if you had something with that.
Yeah, I mean, do you find, I mean, for me, I find that with art, with, say, a drawing, I want to get it done quite quickly.
Right.
I don't want to sort of spend too much time on it. Like, I have an idea, and I just want to draw it and finish it and just move on to the other idea.
Right.
I get bored very quickly.
I do too. Yes.
Yeah. And again, another thing is that this motivation thing. I find it hard to sometimes even draw for 5 minutes. I don't know why that is, you know. Like, I'd rather be watching TV or, you know. But when I actually draw it, sometimes I feel quite good. Like, afterwards, I finish it, and it doesn't look too bad. But actually getting to put that pen on that paper is hard.
It's such a struggle. I mean, I got friends who, they have a lot more time on their hands, and, you know, they kind of sit there, and they're like, they're there, they got the, there's a sketch, there's art, you know, a plain paper in front of them.
Yeah.
And they just sit there, and they're not able to, it's so hard to get that pencil just to touch that paper. Yeah. Like, it's just crazy. Yeah. It's, and I totally know what they're feeling, because I was feeling that way last night. I'm like, I was tired, and I was like, I had time, but I just wanted to sit there and, like, find a app on my phone to play with or something than drawing. But I knew once I got into it, I'd get into it, and I did. I was like, all right, let me do it. And I ended up drawing a little bit in my sketchbook, and I was happy. I felt good. I was like, okay, at least I put the pencil down today on the paper. You know?
Well, that's a huge achievement, I think, you know, just to get... But what I found now is sometimes I draw something and I want to put it online.
Yeah.
But I know that it's not really finished. Like, I mean, I can, it looks finished, but I think it's a good idea to take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. Like, spend some more time on it, you know. And, you know, something like sometimes you draw something and then you put it online, and then the next day you look at it and say, oh, you know, I could have done that. I could have spent a few more minutes.
Right.
Yeah, so now what I do, I try to, I don't rush and scan it. I try to do it, and then I just spend a few, like an hour on it. You know?
Right.
I try and sort of finish it, but even give it a more better finish. You know?
Okay, yeah. No, I do the same thing. I'm probably worse at that. I pretty much draw anything, and I'll throw it up online, like, right away, like, I almost didn't put my pencil down yet, and I'm putting it online.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, like, you get kind of bored or, like, you know, something like that. And I definitely find that. And so I guess that's what I wanted to go into next anyways, is more about your current style and how that's going. So this kind of goes well into it. But the kind of odd question that I am curious, but it is, some people think it's kind of a weird question, but I am kind of curious, like, especially since you said that you don't like to take a lot of time on things and you get, like, impatient and stuff, how long does it take for you to do, like, one of these, like, some of the stuff you sent me, like, those fully painted, but there's kind of sketch things at the same time?
You think about... say about altogether to do maybe about 2 hours.
From sketch to
3 hours, I would say, because I would spend, you know, a few minutes, then I would want to have a cup of tea and and then go
so
back to it.
It's from sketch though to finish, basically.
But if you add it all up, I'd say about 3 hours.
Wow.
On a little drawing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is smaller, and I mean, I feel like I could get something that small done. I could definitely do that. I mean, I guess my group painting kind of was like that, and that's kind of on the level of finish as the stuff you sent me. So I guess I could see that. I feel the same way though. Like, once you get into it, the time flies, you don't really think of it, but it is probably, like, 3 hours, but at the same time, it's like, you know, like you said, you feel, like, impatient, you don't want to spend a lot of time sometimes on things, and then you said that you like to give it a little bit of extra time to try to make it really, really finished.
So
I need to definitely do a little more of that.
It's always that thing, you want to put it out, you know, you want people to look at it. And you know that really it's not, you could do much more to it, you know. But you want that, you want to put it online, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's what I find. Like, again, I find it hard. I find I should be more passionate about drawing.
Right.
You know, but and sometimes I don't do. I don't know. Maybe I a whole day and I don't do any drawing, and that's when I feel really guilty.
Yeah.
And then that's when you sort of look at all your you know your pens. You want to get this pen or you want to get this pencil. Oh, you spend all this time procrastinating. You know?
Oh yeah.
Once you get, I've got to get this pencil. If I get this pencil, it'll be okay.
I've spent a lot of time at art stores. Absolutely.
Yeah, but there's some joy about that. There's some pleasure of looking and imagining. Oh, you know, if I buy this equipment, I can sort of imagine myself sitting at my desk producing great art.
But absolutely, definitely. Mm-hmm. So, I guess another thing too, what I was really interested in is getting into some of your influences and stuff. Obviously. You're pretty open about that. You put your influences, you know, right out there. You're always posting pictures of the cute girls from the from like what is it like the 40s to 60s, I would say, era.
Usually 60s or 50s, 50s.
Like 60s maybe, or 50s.
Betty Page. Yeah. Oh, so you know, Brigitte Bardot. You know, all those girls from that era. I like.
Absolutely.
Because I mean, they're almost regular, quite stylized. You know, you look at their hair and their eyes. You know, it's almost like they're you know, they just look like almost characters. You know.
Yeah.
You can draw. You know?
And when did you kind of like? How did you stumble across this style? Like, did this like gradually develop, or did this just you experimented one day and you kind of found it and went with it, Maybe what are some of the other influences? I feel like I see Art Deco in there.
yeah, plenty of that. Like a lot of the, even like other artists, like Shane Glines?
I'm not sure.
All right, he's on Facebook. He does a lot of this sort of cute girl drawings, and there's so many artists who draw like that. You know, so I've been influenced by other artists, but also especially like with drawing a girl's face. Now I can do it automatically. Like I know how to draw the lines, you know, the curved line and the straight line.
Right.
And then I know how to draw the eyes. So it's become quite, in a way, it's like a shorthand now.
Okay.
But it's, for me, I want to develop my skill in drawing hands and feet and basically the whole body, but basically mainly hands.
Right.
So I can draw the face and I can draw the sort of the neck and the shoulders, but when it comes to putting hands, I find it very difficult.
Right. So. Yeah, hands are tough, especially when you're drawing smaller.
yeah. This is the thing. That's why I've not really done any comics, because in a comics you have to draw. If you're going to draw a character, you've got to draw them in different positions.
Right.
And that's why I find it very difficult. But I'm trying to think of a way where maybe I can make it so stylized that I don't have to, you know, draw something that is so realistic looking.
Yeah, I have such a hard time with that myself because, you know, I love stylized art.
Mm.
Obviously, I love your art. I love... like people like Jim Mahfood and Brandon Graham, a lot of these comic artists that are more on the stylized side. They're some of my favorite artists. But at the same time, I grew up, you know, looking at, you know, Todd McFarlane and all these guys. Yeah. Jim Lee, Wills Portacio was like my favorite for the longest time. And these guys, they did stylized. And then they also put in a lot of detail. A lot of people say too much detail, almost to the point where it's like those lines aren't even, there's no way you would even see that in what you're drawing, but you just put all a lot of lines for no reason. But I like that, you know, I grew up on that. So it's like I'm kind of torn. Like and part of it, I do tend to, with the Glyph comics, I've gone a little bit more stylized, but at the same time, they're so small drawings that I don't even do that well sometimes. Mm. And then I just have a lot of fun, like, noodling around with stuff and putting a lot of cross-hatching, too. So it's really tough for me to land on a very stylized approach, because I also feel like, I feel almost like people, I don't want people to pigeonhole me into one style, I guess, is probably the way I feel. Okay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think those people who do have a very distinct style are the ones who are more successful, you know?
Mm. Yeah. But, I mean, you grew up in Image Comics. So this is the early 90s, right? Cause, I mean, I have no idea what Image Comics are. I mean, I've seen a few, but...
Yeah. I mean,
I think probably that... at that time, I wasn't reading comics.
Right.
So this was the early 90s.
Oh, yeah. It was... craziness, and the art is, you know, there's a lot of bad anatomy going on, but at the same time in my opinion, a lot of it carried, really, like, drew on the energy that somebody like Jack Kirby was doing, you know, back in the days. Just the energy. I'm not saying they're as good as him or anything like that, but you can see, and they would be a little more creative with as far as panels and breaking panels and, you know, doing all kinds of different shapes and stuff, whereas before it was more like a grid situation with comics. So they did a lot of things like that to kind of get more, like, as Todd McFarlane would say, designy with it. So... but a lot of people criticize that, but I can't help it. A lot of people also grew up on that, too, and I'm one of those people, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's the same with me when I grew up looking at Fazetta and those artists.
Right.
I loved them because they were actually working in oils and in, you know, acrylics. So when I see a digital art now, I just don't find the same depth in digital art. You know, it just looks to me plastic. It doesn't look... right, you know. I know there's some very beautiful digital art, but it's almost like digital artists working in Photoshop, they almost like got too much time on their hands. Like they go to every inch of the painting and detail it too much, you know.
Well, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely, I think, a different kind of craft to it. And Have you, I know I've talked about him a lot and you listen to the podcast and stuff, but have you checked out Jeff Lafferty's stuff at all?
Yeah. Okay. He's a bit like Drew Struzan, his style.
Yeah, he's definitely, that's typically what you would think right away by looking at his stuff, but as you look a little more deeply into it, there is definitely his own distinct style to it as well.
Yeah.
And I love that how he... the way Jeff does his thing, and I know because I've listened to a lot of his YouTube videos and stuff, is he makes sure, like, the face is the most important. Like, that's where the focus is. So that's where most of the detail will go in. But you'll notice as it starts to go away from the face, it's a little less detailed. There's still a lot of detail in the body and stuff. And then especially in the background, it starts to get really stylized, and it's almost like a sketchy color... effect, which he uses a lot of colored pencils, so, and it's really cool. And then he also brings in, like, kind of a mistiness sometimes to some of the pieces, and I mean, and it's all analog, and I mean I bought one of his prints, but even that I don't think does justice. I really want to get one of his paintings, because you know, it's just so much different when you see a painting in person compared to even if you see it online, you know. There's it's like, like you said, there's more depth, I think, is really the thing.
Well, funny you mentioned that. Like, when I saw, immediately when I saw his art, I could, you know, I knew it was done by hand. It wasn't digital. Right. And it's almost like he's making a jewelry piece, you know, the way he embellishes it. And you can only get that by, I think, by pencil and by actually drawing it by hand.
Right.
You can't get that digitally, even though, you know, you can mimic. These you know, the software mimics pencil and paint.
Right.
The love and the depth is not there. You know?
Right. And I think people, it really shows a lot as well in people who work a lot with mixed mediums, because the tools, the different mediums and stuff have different textures and stuff like yeah. that, and you yeah. can actually see that in the actual piece. And yeah. you're also kind of that limitation. It's like that whole limitation breeds creativity. You know, you have a limitation of how this colored pencil works against how this watercolor or this airbrush works, and
yeah.
the type of effects you can get with it. And so there's just, like you said, again, another, it's like a depth of, there's a few different depths. There's like a literal, like it looks deeper, like almost like a 3D type of depth.
Yeah.
And then there's
yeah.
also a depth of texture. And yeah, there's a lot of that.
The person's skill, you know, and the many hours he's gone into producing that little illustration, you can feel the work that's going to it, you know?
Absolutely.
And I don't get that with digital art. I find it, there's some sort of, it doesn't resonate with me, you know? I mean, even though yeah. there's lots of beautiful work out there, yeah. I rather like a Fazetta, but I know that Fazetta is done, you know, it's by hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, personally, I tend to prefer the same thing. I guess there is probably a lot of positives, too, that go with the digital stuff. Even mm. in aesthetic, one of the things is, you know, it has a luminosity that is hard to mimic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, you can get some amazing stuff. I mean, there's so many people who can, like, really draw, like, paint light well with a painting. Mm. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. But a good thing with digital work is doing the rough work, is the sketch. You know, right. when I draw something out, I don't have to resize it by right. hand. You know, I can do it, put it all together in Photoshop, you know, right. and then print it out and then do it by hand.
Right. So, yeah. That's something I haven't tried out before, but I know that's a very well often used illustration technique, and I'm hoping to do that soon. I'm kind of saving up for a scanner printer setup, one that can do right. the full size comics,
right.
Scan that, and then basically actually the same printer that Jeff has.
Okay.
I might be getting that or maybe the next one above it, depending on what I can save up. But
you mean a printer scanner?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So as big as 17 by 11, is it?
Yeah. Yep. So that will be good, because then I can start doing this process that you guys, I've seen you guys. I mean, I could do it on a smaller level, but my printer yeah. doesn't have ink, but I could do yeah. it on a smaller level. But yeah, I want to be able to do it on the full-size comic pages too, and you know, maybe blue line some stuff, get it all set up, get the word balloons, kind of like Kevin's been doing with yeah. his 100-day stuff. Mm. And, you know, then print that out on the Bristol and go to town with inks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, print it out as a blue line on the Bristol and then ink.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Then if you do mess it up.
Yeah.
What do you think about doing doing separate panels on different pages and putting it together in Photoshop? Is that something you wouldn't want to do? You would rather do the whole thing on one page?
Yeah, I would rather do it all on one page. That sounds like a fun experiment, too. I mean, but I don't, like, I feel like that would be really kind of tough.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, not only that, but I really like the idea of one comic page being like a piece of art, you know what I mean? Like a full-on yeah. piece of art. So,
yeah.
I probably would definitely lean more towards that.
Yeah, I know you're a fan of Jack Kirby.
Absolutely.
You know, like, yeah, you know, I mean, but funny because I see a lot of artists now mimicking his style.
Yeah.
You know, there's a guy called Tom Scaloli.
Mm-hmm.
He's done the Transformers comic.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've seen those.
It's very similar. You know, you can see the influence there. You know, and there's quite a few artists who mimic that, you know, Kirby style.
Well, I mean, it's that whole thing is kind of interesting because, first of all, when Kirby left Marvel and went to DC,
right.
Stan Lee told every artist, basically, you have to draw like Kirby. Do your best Kirby impersonation. And if I can basically tell you what I want in a comic and you actually write and draw the whole thing and bring it back to me, that's even better. If you can't do that, then I'll try my best. But that's kind of what I got from my studies so far of what happened. But you know, so that was like already something. And then, you know, he was already obviously a hugely popular artist. I mean, people went to him when they wanted, you know, a comic that would sell, basically. And, you know, so people were already going to mimic him anyways. He was, like, the most popular artist. And now back, there was a time, actually, in Marvel where he came back and he was working in Marvel. And, you know, he was celebrated then, but then it started to fade out where people were like, oh, he's like, old school style, and people started kind of almost like disrespecting him and stuff, like in the offices and stuff, which is really crazy.
When Jim Lee's art was more popular? Or?
No, this was before that, like kind of around when X-Men was starting to get reignited and stuff like that. Like, I think in the Shooter days, what's his name, Jim Shooter? He was like he was the executive over there, and, you know, a lot of the newer artists were starting to kind of go away from the whole Kirby stuff, and
right.
I think this was more in the 70s to late 70s probably time,
right?
Maybe even early 80s. But then the respect came back around. People started to almost rally around him. And actually, a lot of people have a lot of respect for Jack Kirby, but then they have a lot of disrespect for Image Comics. But honestly, the guys from Image Comics probably honored Kirby more than anybody else in some ways. Because... Yeah. They really loved his art, so they tried to bring that same energy to their comics. One thing. But then also, you know, they broke out of the system that Kirby was kind of stuck in pretty much all of his life. Yeah. And then once they did that, because they were making millions of dollars, like they were nuts at that point. And they were buying Kirby art for more than Kirby had ever sold it before. They also hired him do his own books too through there, but unfortunately he like died like the year after Image started. But on those books that he worked on or whatever, he got paid more on those comic books than he ever did in his life. They really honored Kirby, so I don't know. I forget what the original question was, but
I've got a comic here that I bought in 1972. I don't know if you can hold it up. You see that? I'm holding up a Fantastic Four.
Oh, nice.
This is not 1970.
Yeah.
But it's Kirby, and then there's a. I'll just show you this.
That's later during his run on Fantastic Four. Yeah,
it's just awesome. Beautiful.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I don't know. I look at modern day comics like Fantastic Four now.
Yeah.
And looked at the issue in the library, and it was all young. They're all young. Reed Richards looks like he's 18.
Right.
And the artwork is almost like it looks like engraving. It's so over the top.
Wow.
You know, it's so it's taken so much time over it. It doesn't, it doesn't feel. There's no movement, you know.
Yeah.
I don't see the, the coloring is all airbrushed.
Right.
Every page looks like a splash page.
Yeah.
I don't get any storytelling, you know.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. No, there's definitely something to be desired sometimes with these modern comics, but. At the same time, some really amazing stuff is being created as well.
True.
It's actually, in some ways, it's almost a golden age for comics at this point because a lot of independent people are breaking out in an independent fashion.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy because the most popular comics are getting so boring because it's just like, I mean, how can you keep making Captain America fresh? You know, like, what else? What are you gonna do next? He's already died and come back, I think, right? I mean, I mean, they just
combinations of characters, you know.
And they just killed Wolverine, but they'll bring him back in a few months, I'm sure. He's like their most popular character. They can't kill him off. Yeah. I mean, it's silly, you know, and you don't see TV shows lasting that long. You don't see anything else lasting that long, you know. Let it be what it was and move on to new stuff, but they can't. I mean, it's a business thing. It's money. Yeah. They have to try to do what they can to just keep these characters going.
Yeah, but I think it's a dwindling pool of readers because the people who go to see Guardians of the Galaxy are not going to buy the Guardians of the Galaxy comic. I mean, the kids, the young kids who see this movie, they're not rushing out of the cinema wanting the comic.
Right.
You know, they might get the comic, but, you know, they're not becoming comic readers.
Right.
After they see Spider-Man.
Yeah. I mean, it does increase some of that a little bit, but not like you would, like...